Baltalan is an interesting limud in that it's only one siman in Shulchan Aruch. It's only 10 seifim or so, and there isn't that much on the page. There is a lot of contemporary stuff on the topic. There are entire svarim written on Baltalan. There are entire chapters of works on the laws of labor in general. Often have a chapter on Baltalan. There's actually quite a lot of modern literature on it. So tonight, in the last half hour of our study of this topic, I'm just going to discuss some of the halacha l'maisa, some of the practical applications, and some of the ideas that we can take out of Baltalan. So, first, just one very important thing that needs to be understood whenever we discuss Baltalan. So, as we know, Baltalan, there are five lavin. We call it Baltalan, that's the shorthand. There are actually five different lavin: Baltalan, Lasavol of Hashemesh, Lasashok, Lasashok 2, Losigzel, a mitzvah, Biyomatitin Scharo, a lav, Midivre Kabbalah, Baltasha, Al Tamal Rachalech Vashov. But there are five or six lavin and one mitzvah. So whenever we discuss certain situations of Baltalan, we know there are all kinds of exceptions, all kinds of cases where you are mechuyev, you're not mechuyev, a certain kind of payment is valid, is not valid. We always really have to ask ourselves two or three different questions. The first question is, by a certain course of action, are you violating the lav? Are you going to get an avera for doing what you're doing or for not doing what you're doing? Even if you're not, the question is, are you mechayev the mitzvah? As I say, there are many situations where you may not be over the lav, but you also haven't gotten a mitzvah. Now that's fine, but at least you're not in violation. On the other hand, as believing Jews, we would like to get mitzvahs where possible. So that's also an important question we're always going to have to ask: that if you do things a certain way, will you be mekayim a mitzvah or not? So the first basic question we'll discuss is: how do you pay? How do you pay a worker? So today we know you can pay in cash, you can pay by check, you can pay by credit card, you can pay by Bitcoin. You can do all kinds of things. You can give goods. You can barter. You can give them your hat, your watch. So how is a poel supposed to be paid? How are you supposed to pay? What forms of payment are acceptable? And with what forms of payment will you fulfill the mitzvah? And so on. So these questions, the first question of how a poel is supposed to be paid, is not actually discussed in our siman directly. The primary discussion of that is a few simanim earlier in siman shin lamed vav, where the poskim explain that a poel must be paid in cash. You are not allowed to pay, unless he accepts, you're not allowed to pay using metalskim, using the ordinary property. If you have cash and he wants cash, you have to give him cash. That's the first step.
Check is synonymous with cash.
We'll be getting to that very soon. That's an important question. So in classic halacha, halacha deals with three or four kinds of assets. There was kesef, which we think of as cash, but it's important to remember that in the time of Chazal, kesef was typically precious metal-based currency, gold or silver or copper, which was stamped by a king. So the value derived largely from the underlying value of the metal, but they were also coined by the government into coins. Today we don't have that system, obviously. Today we do use some metal money coins, although the price has no relation to the value. With most coins, it's considerably more. With some coins, it's actually less. And I've heard, at least as the metals move, pennies or certain very low value coins, it costs the mint certainly more to make them than the actual denomination of the money is. But in any event, our currency is not based on the underlying value of the precious metals. And there is actually a question elsewhere in halacha, not really relevant to Baltalan, there is actually a question as to whether our coins are considered kesef in Chazal's category or they're considered shtaros. Shtaros, bills, notes, or Chazal typically called loan documents, bonds. There are those who have said, there are poskim who have argued that our money, because it doesn't have any inherent value, should be classified as shtaros. But in any event, for the purposes of Baltalan, the consensus clearly is that our coins are our money, whether it's bills or coins, are clearly considered kesef, and that is the ideal way a poel should be paid. If you give your poel a dollar bill, or quarters, or whatever, you have paid him in the best way possible, you fulfill the mitzvah, you avoid that there. What if you have no coins, but you have other kinds of property? You have a watch, you have a laptop, you have a hat. So we mentioned earlier that normally you would be obligated, if you can, to sell those objects to pay a poel. If you owe a poel money, and all you have are goods, you can't tell, I don't have money, take it or leave it, this is what I have. It's your obligation. That's what it said. The poskim say in Shin Lamed Vav. It's your obligation to sell the property insofar as it can be sold, take the money, and pay the po. If you do not do so, will you violate Bal Tullin? If you don't, if you have metal, if you have no cash, you have metal tullin, you choose not to sell it and not to offer it as payment, will you violate Bal Tullin? This is a machlokas. Some poskim, some rishonim say yes, you will, insofar as it's your obligation to convert your assets into money and pay him. If you don't do so, you will violate Bal Tullin. Other poskim say you won't. Certainly, one, if possible, one should, to avoid violating Bal Tullin. So that's cash, and that's metalshul. What if you can only sell the metalshul at a loss? What if you can pawn your object? You can always sell something if you're something of value, if you're willing to eat enough of a loss on it. So there the post can say that you are not obligated to do so. The Bikivagar, in a note on our page, brings from the Sefer HaChinuch, who's one of the authorities who says that a person is obligated to sell his metalshul to avoid Bal Tullin. However, he says, if you cannot sell it without taking a loss, then you do not have to do so, at least if the loss is significant. The language of the Chinuch here that brought by Bikivagar is, if you can only sell it by in Yovat Harbe, if you will lose a great deal, then you do not have to do so. Great deal is not defined. At least one contemporary Sefer I saw, the Sefer Minchas Tzvi by Rav Spitz from Eretz Yisrael, he says that loss, he infers from the language of the poskim or from his own Svara, he says loss is defined not by the amount relative to your overall balance sheet, to your overall net worth. Loss is defined as a percentage of the asset that you're selling. So even if it's only a $50 watch, if you can only sell it for $10, that's a major loss, that you're losing 80% of the value. While even if it's a $10,000 item you'll have to send, a $10,000 car, if you can sell it for $98.50 or something, that would probably not be a loss, not be considered a significant loss, because you're getting more pretty close to fair value of the object. That's his position, at least, that loss here means significant loss relative to the price of the object. So cash, if you have it, assets should be converted in order to pay on time, if they can be, without significant loss. If there'll be significant loss, then you do not have to do so. What about a very common case is, you reach...
Is loss calculated based on your basis of property or this fair market value?
Meaning, how much you bought it for?
Yeah.
That's a good question. So Rav Spitz also, it's a very good question. Rav Spitz, in his discussion, discusses securities, which he says fluctuate on the exchange every day. So he says, he takes for granted that he doesn't directly address cost basis, he discusses things like, if you say that I don't want to sell now because the market's down, I want a cheshbon loss based on what I think the price will reach, he says you don't do that. An asset that fluctuates on an exchange, he takes for granted you look at the current fair market price, and if you can get close to the current fair market price, I think he takes for granted you don't look at basis, you look at the cost basis, you look at the current price.
Should you sell the metal in so you don't have a baltasha, though? Let's say there's no way you're going to be able to sell before the time's over.
Selling metal to avoid baltasha, that's an interesting question, because that's another point I wanted to make, that we know the Shulchan Aruch says that you're over baltasha if you're over baltasha, the poskim say, if you're not turid, if you're masha the poel and you can do it comfortably without terrible inconvenience, you're over baltasha, the alav midivrei Kabbalah. The poskim are all medayik, however, from Tosis in Bav Metzia, one of the Tosis that we did, that this heter, that if you can't do it comfortably, you don't violate baltasha, that's only because that's a rabbinic lav, which is of less force and of less severity than the biblical lav. The biblical prohibitions you violate, even if you are busy, that's no excuse, make time to pay. Tosis says, the Gemara says, that certain amoraim deliberately had agents appoint higher poel, and they didn't do it themselves to avoid Bal Tullin. Tosa says they were doing this because they were afraid they might be tarred. Tosa says, Hayayare shlo hayapani litin. The implication of Tosa is, all that Achronim bring, is that the biblical lavin are violated even if your excuse is that you were busy, you weren't pana, you still violate the biblical lavin. So therefore your question is that if we're telling you that you have to sell metaltalin to avoid Bal Tullin, it wouldn't necessarily follow that you also have to sell metaltalin to avoid the less severe rabbinic prohibition. I don't know the answer to that offhand. That's a good question. So, cash, property should be sold if it can be sold without undue loss. Check. What about checks? So, checks, we have no consensus in the poskim. there are three or four different ways of looking at checks. So first of all, the post can distinguish between three or four different cases of check. The best case scenario is a non-post-dated normal check given to the worker at a time when banks are open and the check can be cashed. The middle scenario is a check which is also dated immediately, but banks are closed, weekend, night, or something. Worst case scenario is post-dated check. The first case, the best case, check which is payable, which can be presented for payment immediately when banks are open. Some posts can treat that as cash because it's readily convertible to cash. Other posts can say it's not cash because cash is currency. Cash is legal tender. Checks are not legal tender by any stretch of the imagination.
Change the bank, the Poles bank doesn't make them hold the money for like 2 days before they let them use it?
That's a good question. The fact that the banks place hold, depending on whether you have accounts at the same bank or other banks, so that's a good question. The post can I see didn't get into that. So yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. Arguably, if they hold all the funds or even part of the funds for a period of time, that would be the same as the bank not being open because he can't convert it to cash on that day. Yeah, so that's a good point. I'm not sure how to deal with that.
Can you sign over a check to somebody and give it to them?
Yes. So some posts can argue that even in the case where the banks are closed, since checks have a value, they can be converted to cash, they can be sold. Some posts can want to argue that they're like other assets we discussed earlier, like metalslin, like your watch, like your hat, even though it's not cash, but it's something that can be converted relatively straightforwardly to cash. So there are those who argue that you treat it at least like metalslin, which the mitzvah applies. The more extreme position is that a check is treated like himcheu etzel chenveni. Just like we learn over there that himcheu etzel shulchani, himcheu etzel chenveni, if I tell the worker, go collect, go take your salary from somebody else, so I won't be over the lav, at least insofar as he agrees. Whether he has to agree is machlok saposkin, but at least if he agrees, I won't be over the lav. But here becomes very important the point I made in the beginning, the introduction. You also, it is not clear that you'll be mekayim da'ase. Certainly if he agrees, you don't violate anything. You never violate something as long as he agrees, except for the shar mishpat, some of the mukubal, that shita that says that you do violate some issur, even if he agrees. But in general, you don't violate any prohibition if he agrees. But if the check is really not considered cash and not even considered assets, if it's just considered what we look at illegally as simply a direction to your financial institution to release money to him or to extend credit to him on your account, if that's not considered cash at all, you may not be mekayem the mitzvah. If he accepts it, you won't violate the lav. Rabbi Yashiv is quoted as having said that a check is simply nothing more than instruction to the bank to pay, like himcheu etzel shulchani. It's not considered cash of any sort. So
we're not really viewing it as if the Pole thinks that he got paid. He asked any Pole to get a check. He asked if he got paid. He's like, yeah, I got paid.
Right.
It's not. We don't care about that.
So that was the next thing I wanted to mention. That's also a good argument. There are posts who take a different perspective, independent of this legal discussion halachic discussion of what a check is. There are posts who argue that we look at the prevailing custom, that insofar as in this industry, in this country, in this economic culture, checks are typically offered and accepted as payment, then that's how halacha defines payment, even though in Shin Lamed Vav we have certain rules of what's accepted, but as in much of Chosh and Mishpah, we follow Minhag, and if the Minhag is clear that checks are accepted, then you certainly won't be over the lav, and you may even be Mekayim Lasei, because this is considered as payment in the economic culture you're dealing with. It would very much depend. I personally don't know. I typically have no idea when I walk into a business whether they're going to accept a check until I look and see a sign. We do accept checks, we don't accept checks, so I typically don't know, but in a case, and maybe some people do know, some industries it's more standard, in an industry where it's clear one way or another, then there are posts who argue that defines whether payment has been made, whether you have fulfilled the mitzvah or not. Once we move beyond cash, assets, and checks to things like credit cards, Bitcoin, anything else, I haven't seen any real discussion of this. Again, if you work with this kind of attitude that you follow Minhag, you follow standard, then certainly in many areas credit cards are standard. I would be very surprised if I walked into any grocery that didn't take credit cards for a sizable order in today's thing, or any electronics store, I'd certainly be surprised. I mean, those examples are not Baltullan, those examples are sales, but certainly there are some areas where it's very uncommon credit. So if you work with this svara that the payment is defined by the prevailing custom, then it likely would be considered, even though nothing tangibly changed hands. I didn't even give him a check. I simply gave him a number. I could have done it over the phone. I could have simply told him my number. I didn't even have to swipe. I could have done it over the web or over the phone. if you argue that some kind of cash actually has to have taken, actually has to have changed hands, then you have to consider the nitty-gritty details of the electronic payment system. Is he able to present his, to present the credit card order to his bank and get the money on that day or not? Does it make a difference? And these questions would be substantially less clear as to whether they're considered payment or not. The last case I started talking about briefly before was possibly even the most common case that people, this happens all the time. You have a large bill, a denomination that's simply larger than the money you owe, and neither of you have change. So what are you supposed to do? So if you can get change from a third party, then again, certainly according to the opinion, which is I think something of a consensus view, that if you have any kind of non-cash asset, you're obligated to change it, you need to convert it to cash in order to pay the worker, and certainly you would be expected to go take your hundred and take it somewhere and get it changed and get it exchanged and pay the worker what you owe him. According to the guideline we said before, you would only have to do that if you wouldn't take an inordinate loss. Typically, one doesn't take a major loss by converting cash, even if there's some service that charges a small fee, it would typically be a nominal fee, and I think it wouldn't be an issue. If, however, there is no such availability, one case that Schmitz discusses again is the case of a babysitter. You come back late from a wedding at night, your babysitter wants to go home, you don't have time to start looking for people who are still up at 1 in the morning to exchange bills for you. So what are you supposed to do? So Rabbi Schmitz at least argues that you're not obligated technically to overpay her and give her the extra money and expect her to return, even if you trust her, even if he or she is a reliable person, you don't feel your money is at risk. You're simply not obligated to pay more. If the choice is pay less or pay more, that's considered ainlo. You're not mechuyev to lay out extra money. So you simply don't have an option. You can't convert the money, and technically mikra din, you wouldn't have to pay until tomorrow. However, he says, since we find in the poskim in general that even borrowing, we saw the Pesachei Tshuva brings, and we saw sources in Avos Chesed, many Achronim say that even borrowing is something a person should do if he has to fulfill the mitzvah, then letting the poel have the extra money overnight, certainly if you don't need it till the next morning, it's not going to cause you any harm, is certainly something that one should do if possible, simply to be mekayim the mitzvah. Again, even if you won't violate the law by not doing it, but if one has a chance to mekayim the mitzvah and there's no significant downside, of course, if you don't trust him, he says, or if you need the money overnight, then you have to do what you have to do. But you're not over the law because you simply don't have available cash to pay. But if you can, you should give the entire bill over and just take the rest and then exchange it when you get a chance. Another situation, I don't know how common this is, and this varies very much by industry, but one situation in which we find something of a sharp dispute among the poskim is, let's say you're dealing with a situation where the money comes due sometime after the work is completed. In certain economies, rent, the poskim talk about, was typically not due till a few days into the next month, or certain services. Certain workers, you typically pay them, let's say, at the end of the month or halfway through the next month, even for a work period that was completed earlier. Is there baltal in such a situation or not? There we find different opinions. The Rabblai and the Pesach Hoshen, I think.
Is there baltal like on a daily basis, or is it baltal, does the concept not apply?
We can discuss both possibilities in a second. So for concreteness sake, let's say, some of the poskim say it seems the custom was rent was due a week into the next month. Rent was paid in arrears for the previous month, but it wasn't even due till a week into the next month. So will Baltalin apply? So some poskim, I think Rav Spitz, or Bloy, have compared it to Yom HaDeshuka. So what the Gemara says, the Shulchan Aruch says, that when the worker deals with an employer who typically didn't have cash on hand and wouldn't have cash till the market day, and the work was finished a few days earlier, baltalin does not apply, neither at when the work is completed nor at the market day. It doesn't apply originally because there was an understanding that he wouldn't have money, that it wasn't due then because everyone understood he wouldn't have cash till market day. There's also no baltalin at the market day because the principle we see is that baltalin can only take effect on the morning, on the morning or the night after the work is done. Baltalin can never occur on a delayed payment day. Some poskim have therefore argued that any bill which doesn't come due immediately upon completion of the work, there will not be baltelin, neither at the completion of the work nor at the time the bill comes due. The baltelin will not apply when the work is completed, when the rental is completed, because there was an understanding that it's not due then, so there certainly won't be baltelin. It also won't apply later, because once baltelin doesn't kick in immediately after the service is rendered or the rental period is completed, it cannot occur later. There is a dissenting opinion of Moshe Sternbach, and his Chuvas van Hagos disagrees strongly. He says, the only time, the Yom HaDeshukah, the only time baltelin doesn't apply is because there, the money really is due on Yom HaDeshukah. He knows he won't be able to pay it, so he accepts a kind of delay until the Yom HaDeshukah. However, he says, in a case where the entire deal is originally set up, that the payment becomes due primarily later, then baltelin will kick in on that later date. When that was mitchila, the ideal day, not just b'diavad because I didn't have money, but baltelin, when the payment deadline was initially set up to be at a later date, baltelin will indeed kick in on that later date. So I'll conclude with one last point. This is something that has troubled me literally for probably a decade or two. I've been struggling with this for years and years. It's a hashkafic halacha question. I'm not quite sure how to deal with this. I'll mention my issue and throw it out for comment. There's a tradition told of the Chafetz Chaim. I don't know where it comes from. A number of the contemporaries Sfarim bring it. That, as we discussed earlier, when you're dealing with Baal Talon, there are always two issues. There's the lav. You don't want to violate an Isser D'Oraisa, Chas V'Shalom. There's a mitzvah. You want to be Mekayim a mitzvah. So the Chafetz Chaim is said to have maintained as follows. Let's say you hire a taxi, a wagon in his time. When is payment due? Upon completion of the taxi ride. So you pay him as soon as he drops you off, you leave the wagon, you pay him, you tip him, whatever, and great, you're Mekayim a mitzvah, you've avoided violating the lav, wonderful, everyone's happy. Says the Chafetz Chaim, let's say I try to be nice. I pay him earlier. I pay him upon getting into the taxi. Normally you wouldn't do that, but that's because it's only a half hour ride. Let's say he's working for a week, for example. He's painting your house. He's doing a week's worth of work. He asks you, if you don't mind, can I have some of the money up front or in middle? Because I want to be able to buy lunch for my kid. So milk for my baby. So the Chafetz Chaim, I don't know if he's talking about that case, but at least in the case of the taxi, the Chafetz Chaim is reputedly would deliberately avoid paying the worker early. He would say, if I pay the worker early, I'm certainly not violating any law, because when the money comes due, he already has it, so I prepaid. However, he says, I'm also not mekayem the mitzvah aseh, because the mitzvah aseh is to pay at the right time, which is later. If I pay early, I haven't violated anything, I haven't been mevatel a mitzvah, but I also haven't been mekayem a mitzvah. So I don't get credit in the heavenly ledger for doing a mitzvah aseh. So the Chafetz Chaim reputedly would deliberately insist on waiting till after the service was completed and the money came formally due before he would pay. And this is brought by several contemporary poskim, I think Rav Sternbach, Rav Spitz, Rav Bloy, a number of the contemporary works bring this, I'm not sure about Rav Bloy, other Sfarim bring this as a conduct of the Chafetz Chaim. Rav Spitz says it's on his own. He thinks that this logically makes sense. So what should you do? So Rav Spitz asks, if a person really, the worker wants the money earlier and you'd like to accommodate, you have the money, so, but you also want to get a mitzvah. So what should you do? So he has two suggestions for you. He says, either pay him the bulk of the money in advance, but save a little bit for the end. Because as we know from the Chafetz Chaim, even if you don't pay even some of the money, you're over Baal Talon, and if you do pay even whatever the remainder that you owe, you're Mekayim the mitzvah. So you owe him $100, give him 99, and when he finishes the job, you give him the last dollar, you're Mekayim the mitzvah with the last dollar. And he's happy because he got a significant chunk of the money up front. Another suggestion Rav Spitz says is give him the money, but this wouldn't help in a case where he actually has to spend it possibly, but give him the money and tell him, you want the money in advance, you don't trust me, you want to feel secure, fine, so I'm giving you the money, but do me a favor, let's consider it a pikadon. It won't actually be your money yet, you'll just hold it in trust for me until the end of the job. Again, this is not going to work if he needs the money, actually, but if he just wants to feel secure and have the money in his pocket, tell him, hold the money as essentially an escrow. Escrow normally is a third party, obviously, but just hold the money. I trust you, but don't spend it, then we'll officially transfer the money to you when I finish the job. As I said, for years and years, I've been deeply troubled by this. The whole point of the mitzvah of paying your worker on time is because Elif Unosius Nafsho, he needs the money, he's poor, he's desperate. So what sense is there in deliberately trying to be frum and saying I'm dafka not going to pay you until the work is done? Doesn't the Torah want you to go the extra mile for the worker for payment in advance? Isn't that a good thing? The Chafetz Chaim would dafka. The Chafetz Chaim may have only been talking about a case where the worker didn't really need the money. It wasn't going to make a difference 15 minutes earlier. A taxi ride he was talking about 15 minutes earlier or 15 minutes later. It's not a big deal. So do it in the formally correct way, in kind of the mitzvah. But does this really make sense that you should deprive the poor worker of his salary just because you want him to kind of mitzvah? So Rav Sternbach, I saw, indeed, is not so thrilled with the story. And he brings the story. He doesn't doubt its veracity, but he says he doesn't know if the Chafetz Chaim really did this mikra adin. He doesn't really understand the calculus so well. Surely a person who goes out of his way to pay the poll earlier is doing a wonderful thing and doing a mitzvah. But so I don't know. I don't know what to make of the story. I mean, everyone can tell me what he thinks of this, whether this is the way God wants us to act or not. But nevertheless, this is a story, and this idea seems to be endorsed by a number of the contemporary authors. Well, at least that you see from this how important Baal Talon is, how important mitzvahs are, to do what you can. Whether it actually makes sense to do this, to deliberately avoid paying a worker early because you want to be mekayim a mitzvah formally, is, I think, a provocative halachic and hashkafic question. Okay, thank you. And we'll begin Hasagas Gvul next week. Hopefully I'll start with an introduction, I guess, next Monday. We'll open the topic and then we'll take it from there.
Does that mean the Chafetz Chaim holds that even if he gave him some of the money but not all of it, and the last dollar, then there's no mitzvah?
So yeah, that's a good question. The Chafetz Chaim could have thought of this solution too. You mean that Rabbi Spitz says? Yeah, so why didn't he do that? You mean? I don't know. Again, it's hard to. We don't have a documented source of the story, as far as I know. So it's difficult to. You're right. It's an interesting question. Should we infer from the story that he didn't hold to this eitzah for some reason? I don't know what to say. But yeah, that's an interesting question.
So how do you ask about the Nira Day aspect being more in terms of like not letting him down? Like he has an excitement, like when he worked and getting like the.
Yeah, so I was thinking of trying to rationalize it like that, that getting money that you earn, that you know, they're right, getting a mesuka shinas ha'oved, that getting a fair earned, you feel it's not now, but the kisufa, I work for this, it's mine, right. There's
practically, you want to make sure the job gets done.
I'm sorry?
Yeah.
If there's a good reason to, then yes. We're talking about someone who wanted to pay earlier and just isn't because he thinks it's more of a mitzvah, right. Yes, you're right. You can always rationalize and argue like that, and that's true, man. I agree.
Especially in a taxi ride case where it's not like, just like paying him at the beginning as opposed to
right,
the end.
Right, right. Again, that's the example I give, I think, Baal HaGaula. The example I give of the Chafetz Chaim, I think, was Kishrei Nosi Baal HaGaula. So, right, could be that's all he was talking about, where it really makes no practical difference, and just a question of doing it formally in the best way. Right.
Isn't it similar, like, buying comments to do...
Yeah, exactly. That's
there isn't any like that, huh?
So, I ran out of time, but there's a, I guess we still have a couple minutes. The one other metaphor I was going to give was Shiluach HaKein. There are some people, especially today, who go around looking for birds' nests. There is a tshuva in the Chasam Sofer, which again I don't know people have said that we don't pass like this. There is a tshuva in the Chasam Sofer who says that you actually should not do that. He says because what's alpin nigla? He says the Mekubalim have their own reason for shiloh hakein. But I say alpin nigla. What's the reason? The reason is to develop rachmanis, to have mercy on the bird, or to inculcate rachmanis in yourself. The Chasam Sofer says this makes no sense. He says. You don't need the bird. You don't want a bird. You're going to go out. You're going to look for a bird. He's not even talking about looking. He's talking about a case of a guy who wandered into a bird's nest but doesn't particularly want to eat the eggs. He's just going to go around doing it. It's just a mechanic. That makes no sense. The whole mitzvah, he says, is to the Rachmanis. You're going to go ahead, torture the poor bird, and say, oh, I'm doing it the right way to minimize the torture, he says. What sense does that make? According to the Kabbalistic reason, he says, it's to Ma'ara Rachme Shemayim. It has, fine, then I understand, he says. But the Ikra Lahalach, he says, is the reason Alpi Nigla in this case, which is the implication of the Talmud, he says. The mitzvah is to show rachmanah. So if a person doesn't want the birds, adrabat. Not only he's not getting a mitzvah, it's achzarius, he says. He's doing unnecessary achzarius. So it's kind of an analogy, right? But you think Tashbisa, we find there is a mitzvah to go, or people, some of my colleagues in Lakewood, right before Shemitah, after they wrote the Prizbal, they would go borrow a dollar just to Mekayim the mitzvah of Shamat Kolbal Nashe Yadecha. Yes, so there are people who have that attitude. So again, I guess what bothers me more is when you're depriving the poll. Again, it's like he was saying, in a case where you're not really depriving, he doesn't care if it's a 15-minute ride earlier. Could be that's all the Chafetz Chaim was talking about. But in a real case where the worker really would like the money earlier and you're dafka not going to give it to him, not because you want to ensure the work is done, but because you want to make a mitzvah, that just strikes me as a little perverse. When you're actually going to, even though it's your day, there is a Chasam Mishpat angle here. You are supposed to pay him because he needs the money. And to say I'm going to hold on to it longer and not give it to him because I want to make a mitzvah, seems a little debatable.
But these halachas apply equal to blame and to Jewish workers?
They do not. We didn't have a chance to get into that, but They do not. The Gemara talks about their Toshav, the non-Jew, they may not. They Pashtus do not. There is a Spitz, after he goes through saying that it's not, emphasizes how important it is to make sure at least you pay sometime, if not necessarily the Yom HaTitin Tzcharo, because it would be a terrible Chil Hashem if you don't, and it's Gzela right. If you don't pay it all, and Gzela applies even to non-Jews. But the specific mitzvah of Yom HaTitin Tzcharo, the Pashtus is that it does not. There is a Rambam in a couple of places in the Sefer Mitzvahs and in the Yad who says that at least the mitzvah saseh of Yom HaTitin Tzcharo does apply to a guy, but at least some achronim say he really means Ger Toshav, which the Gemara talks about, but an out and out, an ordinary guy, you're not even a Ger Toshav, and the Pashtus is the mitzvah does not apply to them.
Yeah.
Again, you can't steal, you can't defraud him totally, but the mitzvah of Yom HaTitin does not apply.